Welcome to Where is the Imposter? I'm Lucy Thomas and I'm a third year politics and international relations student at the London School of Economics. As someone who has often felt like an imposter and continues to feel like an imposter at times, I'm interested in finding out how common imposter syndrome actually is. I will be talking to people from within a variety of occupations, as well as students that do different degrees from different universities, aiming to expose the prevalence of imposter syndrome and how we may work to overcome it. If you've ever felt like a fraud or like you don't belong, or even if you want to prevent this from happening in the near future, this podcast is for you. Thank you very much for listening. I am joined with Emia Davis. She is a double first class Cambridge graduate in human, social and political sciences, but he's now working as a parliamentary assistant in the House of Commons. But Emia, thank you so much for being here today. And first of all, I'd like to just ask you how you're doing.
No, I'm very well, thanks. Thank you so much for having me on. I feel like I'm not qualified enough to come and speak to you about this, but
no, you definitely
can go.
You definitely are. Thank you. But before we like talk about Cambridge, I would like just kind of like to talk about your experiences in secondary school. As I mentioned, we went to like schools that were really close together. In my kind of own experience of imposter syndrome, when I arrived at uni, I felt that like secondary school had sort of given me like a false sense of confidence in my intellectual ability. Like, I classified myself as one of the sort of like nerdy kids. And, you know, I feel like I was doing quite well. And then suddenly I came to uni and it really blew my mind. And I think it was that classic situation of initially being like a large fish in a small pond, and then that gets reversed. And suddenly I was this tiny fish in this like ocean. How do you kind of look back and see yourself in secondary school? Like, did you ever feel like you're an imposter, or was imposter syndrome just far from your thoughts and not even like a part of your vocabulary?
Yeah, I definitely had moments where I felt like an imposter in school. I think the one that I'll always remember is, so I got quite interested in doing like debating and public speaking in school, and the first ever debating competition that my teacher put me in for, my English teacher, I was like 13 years old and I had to sort of debate against sixth formers. In that moment, I absolutely felt like an imposter, felt like I didn't know what I was doing. I was just making it up as I go along. But I think it kind of like speaks to a broader point about imposter syndrome and how you sort of come to understand it, because like it's a term that gets used in a lot of different ways. It has like quite a flexible meaning to it. And like, I'm sure we'll come and talk about the very like valid ways that it describes a real like social problem. But I think there's also sometimes a danger that we just use the term to like describe experiences where we're outside our comfort zone.
Yeah.
And I almost feel like it's kind of actually quite important to kind of like reclaim the term and to say, okay, it's actually quite good sometimes to feel like an imposter, because, you know, that means that I'm stretching myself and it means that I'm being ambitious and pushing myself. And definitely like after like going back to that debating competition, after coming out of it, even though I probably didn't do very well and my voice probably broke like three times, and everyone else around me was much better, like just having that experience of testing yourself, I remember feeling so much more confident after it. And yeah, like I think it had like quite a big impact on me.
Yeah.
And I sort of like remember that as one of my lasting memories from school. But I don't know, just sort of like go back to your question, I think it's definitely true that when you move from like, especially like we went to quite small state schools, I feel.
Yeah.
And when you move into that like bigger environment of university where you're like around like thousands of people. Yeah, like absolutely. That is like a huge challenge. Yeah.
Yeah. I really like that. I've never like thought of imposter syndrome in that way, because I think I've always been like, oh, I feel like such an imposter, but that's so true. You'd be living such a kind of, well, I don't say boring life, but perhaps not as a stimulating life if you never felt like you're an imposter.
Yeah.
So that's actually so true. So yeah, you just mentioned that we're both from state schools. Would you say that like you adapted to that kind of change in environment quite easily?
Yeah, well, so my expectation after I sort of got my A-level grades and I knew that I was going to be going to Cambridge, my expectation of what that experience would be like, I think, was actually quite different to the reality. So
yeah.
My expectation was that I would feel like everyone else was kind of like posher than me, richer than me. Like I was, you know, the most hard done by person in the world, because that, I feel like that's kind of what the media teaches you to think, that like those top universities are like.
Yeah.
But in reality, like I absolutely did come into contact with people who were much better off than me. But I think the thing that I didn't really anticipate is that you actually also come into contact with people that are much, much worse off than you. And I think especially kind of like, you know, if there are people listening to this, like we are from quite like rural areas, then you don't like often mix up with people from lots of different social backgrounds to you.
Definitely,
I think that's much harder, just like by virtue, because you come across less people. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly.
And like probably more for yourself than me, actually, because you went to, you know, you go to LSE. So, you know, there's just so many, there's like a melting pot of different like social backgrounds and cultures. So yeah, like imposter syndrome is a huge thing, but I think that like what something really valuable that going to uni did for me was to also just give me a kind of broad perspective that there are people much worse off than me out there. So I think it also does sort of make you appreciate what you have a little bit more. Maybe.
That's so interesting. Do you think then, because like, which college did you go to in Cambridge again? I can't remember.
Yeah, so I went to Jesus.
Do you feel like it does differ within colleges? Like if you had been to a different one, do you think you would have felt more of a sense of imposter syndrome?
I think that some colleges definitely do have a reputation for kind of being the kind of like private school pipeline colleges. And some are a little bit more sort of perceived as being like diverse and inclusive.
Yeah.
And I think it's also kind of not just about like the people, but also like the build. Like it sounds like a really like banal point, but like some colleges are just much older than other ones. Just like the really old like Harry Potter style building. I didn't even realize this until like I finished uni, but there is, I can't remember which one, but one of the Oxfords or Cambridge colleges is literally like a replica of the architecture at Eton.
Wow.
So it's designed to make, you know, like kids who went to Eton feel like they're still at home when they go to uni.
That's so
like
strange.
It's kind of like written into the architecture of everything. And
yeah.
So it's kind of crazy. Yeah, I think it's really interesting. And like, I'm always very careful not to get into the whole private school's evil, state school's good type of situation, because like, I don't know, like a lot of my friends
I've got now
like went to private school and they're all lovely people, and ultimately everyone just like plays the hand they're dealt. I think it's true. And like the point about confidence is that like it's so like inflected with social class. Like there are different types of confidence, and I think sometimes when you speak, or like I talk to pupils at state school, and you know, I feel pretty confident in my life. You know, I can talk to people at parties. I can, do you know what I mean? Like,
no, I get you.
I'm fine. But it's like the point that there are different like types of confidence.
Yeah.
And the type of confidence that you're kind of trained in at sort of the elite private schools is the type of confidence that will get you into good unis. So it's specifically the confidence to sit down and talk about, you know, the Grapes of Wrath, or do you know what I mean? Or algebra in an Oxford interview. Like it's a very specific type of confidence that they teach you.
Yeah.
And I feel like that's really important to remember, that we're not like looking down on people like ourselves that went to state school and saying, do you know, you just need to become more confident. It's about like the specific types of confidence and like their uses in getting up that social ladder.
So like going back to what you're saying about like confidence and so on, what would you kind of say to just a student who doesn't have that confidence and wants to apply to like a top university but is thinking to themselves like, oh, I'm probably not good enough, you know, I might not get the grades, I should play it safe?
Yeah, it's a really good question. I think I would say that, you know, when I was doing my GCSEs, my A-levels, my Cambridge interview, I also had that like massive feeling of, am I just completely wasting my time here? I feel like this is all going to go wrong and I'm not good enough to get top grades or go to a really top university. And ultimately, you just have to sort of tune that out. And I think you have to realize that having those thoughts doesn't mean that you're not good enough. Like, objectively, your performance is not determined by having thoughts of imposter syndrome. But what it's actually much more important to be able to do is to sort of like just sort of carry on regardless of how confident you feel about it. Like I felt like I was going to throw up in my Oxford Cambridge interview. Like, I think I actually I was just shaking so much. It was awful. So being nervous or feeling like you're not good enough is absolutely like not a signal of how good you actually are. And you've just got to like put in the effort and the practice. And that's what really counts at the end of the day. I think like fake it till you make it is always a really good motto in life. And
I agree.
Like people have like a perception of Oxbridge application interviews as like you have to turn up in a suit and you have to be really like cool and calm and collected. You don't have to go in with like this massive sense of like gusto and confidence. Yeah. That's actually really not what they care about at all. So I think that's like really important to remember as well.
It's so strange because like I'd never been interviewed before, really. So it was like, oh my gosh, this is so weird. And when I was waiting to go into the interview, this girl sat by me and she was talking to me. She was waiting as well. And she was talking about like her favorite periods in history. And she was like, this is my favorite period. And I was like, oh my gosh, like what if they ask me what my favorite period in history is and I don't have an answer and stuff like that.
Yeah, there are just so many people. I know exactly the type of person that you mean. I feel like most people aren't trying to be malicious. They're just like nervous.
Of course not,
or they're just like, yeah, but it's crazy. But yeah, like at the end of the day, none of that matters. I think I was like more interested in watching the Liverpool game the night before or whatever.
I'm sorry, I'm taking up quite a lot of your time, but I was just going to move on to talk about like the House of Commons, which I actually went to the other day with my parents because they were in London. But yeah, so you became a parliamentary assistant in 2021. Was it strange going from kind of studying politics to then sort of doing it in practice? Like, did you feel like you used what you studied within working as a parliamentary assistant?
Yeah, I feel like politics, and this is probably like another misconception that people feel, that to work in politics you have to study politics at uni.
Yeah,
and I think that doing a like politics degree definitely has helped me in this job, but it's definitely not essential. And like studying politics can often be like quite abstract. Yeah. And spent a lot of time like reading books about political thought that were written like 150 years ago.
Yeah.
And like naturally that's not like a handbook of like how to do this job.
Yeah, okay, that's really interesting. But yeah, was it really strange going from like a university setting to suddenly finding yourself in Parliament, in the House of Commons? Like that's such a huge leap. And yeah, like I suppose, was there any sense of feeling like an imposter?
Yeah, so I think in one way I didn't get a huge sense of imposter syndrome starting this job, because like having transitions from Cambridge, the kind of system is almost designed for that journey to happen. It's kind of designed for people to move from Oxbridge to Parliament. So like that's everything from that, like the building itself almost looks like it could be in Oxford or Cambridge. You know what I mean? Like our Parliament is kind of that architecture. And you mentioned earlier that you've like recently been on a tour. I don't know if you saw in like how much of the inside of the building you saw, but there are like dining rooms which you sit in and you could I literally feel like I'm back at uni. Like I literally feel like the room I'm in is in Cambridge. So in that sense, I don't want to complain too much, because I feel like I have to remember that, you know, I sort of benefit from having gone to Cambridge and working in like this environment that I work in now. And like, that's really awful and something that we should bear in mind when we're thinking about it, like the future of politics is how do we like democratize like even the building itself to make everyone feel welcome in it, not just people from a certain background. But like in another sense, like, yes, I massively felt like an imposter. I'd worked like briefly for a few months in the civil service before I started in Parliament. But I basically had very little like full-time office job experience. And that was quite challenging, because then you move into this environment and you're working in quite a small team. Like, NP's offices are quite small. So, like, inherently, because of that, your opinion is kind of taken seriously and you're listened to, because, do you know what I mean? There's only so many people in the room. So that felt like a massive learning curve, but a good one, because it does develop your confidence, develops your ability to kind of think quickly and critically. So yeah, it was a bit of a challenge, but we got there.
But like, do you think, I mean, I'm not sure if you're allowed to answer this question as well, but I'm hoping you can. But do you think, like, MPs themselves ever feel like a sense of imposter syndrome from what you observe? Because I was kind of reading the other day, someone was saying something about MPs having, like, fragile egos. But would you kind of agree, that's a very general term, but would you kind of agree with this statement? Do you think that there is a sort of sense of imposter syndrome within Parliament and amongst MPs?
Oh, it's such a good question. Yeah, I mean, so MPs come from lots of different backgrounds, obviously.
Yeah.
And so you do have that, like, social class dynamic playing out amongst them. Like, some MPs are much more well-educated. Some come from much more privileged backgrounds, sorry, is the word that I'm reaching for.
Yeah.
I think it's that is probably, like, bubbling away under the surface sometimes. You know, you also have dynamics of, like, race and class and gender and disability. So, yeah, I feel like it's important when we talk about MPs to remember that they are, like, people. They are in themselves, like, a diverse group.
Yeah.
So I'm sure that, like, all the dynamics of imposter syndrome that we've been, like, speaking about sort of reflect into that as well. Yeah, it's also just quite a strange environment to work in when you, like, stop and think about it, in that I feel like, apart from, like, sport, there are very few other workplaces where you're, like, up against different teams.
Yes, of course.
And you're sort of, there's this, like, kind of adversarial, competitive dynamic. And, like, yeah, when you said about kind of fragile egos, I think that, like, the structure of politics, of our politics, and, like, the fact that it's so adversarial probably, like, fuels that. And so I feel like inevitably it probably does create a sense of imposter syndrome.
Yeah.
Because of the fact that everyone is chipping away at each other constantly, often with very good reason.
Of course,
sometimes less so, I think.
Yeah.
Like, it's often widely reported that there is a drinking culture in Parliament. Like, how much of that is people, you know, feeling nervous and feeling like they need to take the edge off in order to be able to do that networking or go and talk to that person?
Yeah.
You know, reason, these things all add up somewhere along the way.
And I think, yeah, it's really interesting what you were saying. Like, we've got to remember, like, MPs do come from very, like, varied backgrounds. You've got, like you said, you felt quite equipped to be working in Parliament in some senses because you went to Cambridge and so on. And then you've got, like, Angela Rayner is, like, the first person that comes to mind, but someone who, like, didn't go to university, you know, didn't do A-levels, if I remember correctly. I really take my hat off to her, because I think it's really impressive what she's done. I think she's really incredible in that sense.
Angela Rayner is such a good example, and one that I was not quick enough to think of when I was answering that question. But yeah, massively, like, she became a mum at a very young age. And it's also, like, a really interesting example of, like, accent and how there are certain journalists in Westminster who, when she gets up to speak at Prime Minister's questions or whenever else, she'll get criticised for, you know, speaking in a certain way or using certain words, and they'll say, that's not correct grammar. And it just kind of reflects this problem that we have, that, especially in our media, I think that there's not people from a diverse enough range of backgrounds.
Yeah.
And that gets reflected back on politicians sometimes in a way that is unhelpful if we're thinking about politics as being, like, about representing the whole country. Yeah. So, yeah.
Because it is quite pompous, isn't it? I remember when we went to the tour, we watched the kind of, gosh, what's it called? Is it, like, the speaker's procession? I can't remember. Like,
the speaker's walk in the morning.
It was so funny. And, like, even I felt like an imposter being there. Like, I felt like I was observing this kind of theatre performance almost. So, like, do you like all of that stuff? I mean, I quite enjoyed watching it because it felt like I was at like a show. But do you like that element of Parliament, and do you think that it's outdated, or like does it maybe as well contribute to this kind of culture of maybe feeling like an imposter if you haven't come from somewhere where you're as familiar with those kind of like rites of passage?
Yeah, I think there are definitely elements of Parliament and traditions that are, if not designed to alienate, then like have effect. And yeah, all the stuff you mentioned about the gold mace and this and that, I think is unhelpful. And yeah, it's really interesting how different the UK Parliament in Westminster is from like the Senate and the Scottish Parliament and Northern Ireland. And yeah, just how different those buildings are and like the effect it has on people. Like I often give tours to people
Of course, yeah.
from like constituents, and just how like amazed people are by it, but often how uncomfortable they are. And like sometimes I remind them that, you know, this is your parliament, like this is your building. It belongs to you as much as it belongs to anyone
That's so
else.
true, yeah.
And like sometimes I feel like it does feel more like a stately home, and people forget that like this is their building, in the sense that not only that their taxes pay to keep it going, but also that it's designed to be the place where they are represented. And yeah, like all these little weird traditions and things sometimes I think make people forget that, and sort of get in the way. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a really good way of putting it. I think when I was there, I never for one moment was like, oh, well, this is like my building. I was like the whole time thinking, this is like a special occasion. Like I shouldn't be here.
Yeah.
Like this is like a, you know, I felt like almost like taking a tour of Buckingham Palace. Like it felt like that
Exactly,
same sort of grandiosity, I suppose. What would you, I think, kind of like as a final sort of question, what would you say to someone who is really suffering with imposter syndrome? Because I think, what would you kind of say to someone who's going through this in their kind of like first year of university as a fresher, or not even as like their first year of university, as their first, they're in their first kind of like proper job, and they feel like they don't belong there, and everyone's way more experienced than them, like.
I try and say this in a way that doesn't make me sound like I'm trying to give a TED talk, but to have like a growth mindset. And what I mean by that is that if you encounter failure or setback, to not allow yourself to be defined by that, to not define yourself by that in your own head, but instead to focus on like what I have learned from this failure and this setback and this experience. And therefore, when I come to this hurdle next time, what am I going to do differently? And therefore, how like better a person or at this task I will become. So it's like it's kind of about thinking of people in a different way, as not like this person's really smart, this person has an IQ, they were born a genius, but instead about thinking of success as something that's like achieved through like hard work, but also reflection and learning from your mistakes. And like I genuinely believe that like most successful people aren't born geniuses or really good at what they do.
Yeah,
It, instead,
definitely.
it's because they put in the hard work and they're able to like reflect on their mistakes.
Yeah.
Like I genuinely believe that, and I think that is probably as good an antidote to imposter syndrome that we'll get, because you might be you might feel like an imposter now, but keep going and you know you'll keep climbing that hill. So
Yeah,
yeah.
I agree. Literally, yeah. I remember in first year I had this one module and it terrified me. I don't know why. I think it's because everyone in the class was so, they seemed so intelligent and just seemed to know everything to the point that I would like just viciously prepare for it. I was like, I would spend, you know, like 2 whole days preparing for this module, and I would walk to the class like sweating. I was so nervous for it because I thought the teacher would like pick on me and stuff like that. But then that ended up being my best module that year. So
Exactly, yeah.
like, because I put so much more work into it, and I suppose it's like using it as a way to motivate you, like you said earlier, to kind of redefine imposter syndrome and see it in a more positive light. But yeah, thank you so much. You're the perfect first interview. I'm so grateful.
Just like, thank you so much. Thanks for having me. It's been so nice. Like, don't often get to like reflect on your life. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, so, of course.
Right, it's quite nice to do, yeah.
Thank you so much for joining me for this episode of Where is the Imposter? Please join me next week where I'll be interviewing Shauna Davis, a current barrister at Number 5 Chambers in London.